As you made your way through the book of Ecclesiastes, of course, some see it as extremely pessimistic and unrealistic and a guy who's not thinking right and whatever. And so he's a skeptic in the minds of others. And the more I read it, I see it as a man of faith who's trying to communicate to you and me some wonderful truths that will keep us off dead end streets. And you might think that it's written for people my age or your age, and you have this sense that he's trying to keep me off a dead-end street. But when you come to the end, you recognize that he's really written it for younger people, that it's really written to help young people avoid the dead-end streets that most of us have tried and found to be dead-end streets. And so as you get to chapter 11, down through chapter 12, verse 7, he's going to talk about youth and young people. And he says, I've gone down that road, my friends. I've tried the school of hard knocks. I tried this. I tried that. I tried all these things. And then God gave me wisdom and insight and direction. And through that, I have learned some things and I want to share it with you so that, well, hopefully you don't have to take all those dead end streets and go through those schools of hard knocks. And maybe you could be somebody that would avoid some of the pains and suffering that we had to go through. There's a sense as you read chapter 11 through chapter 12, verse 7, he says, before it's too late, do this and do that and do this and do that. And we have to recognize that we want to do that before it's too late. But I'd like to suggest to you that I don't know how old you are tonight, but I suspect that although it's written to the young people, it's written to you as well. Before it's too late, you might not have many years left statistically compared to a 16-year-old kid. But even you have some years left. Before it's too late, he says, I'd encourage you to do these various things in your life. Notice what they are as you read through them. In chapter 11, verse 1 through 6, which was read for us, it says, cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find them after many days. As you drop down to verse 7, truly the light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to behold the sun. And then he says in verse 9, rejoice, O young man, in your youth. And then in verse 1 of chapter 12, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. And as you read through that, he's trying to communicate to young people. And he says, before it's too late, here's what I'd encourage you to do. Verses 1 through 6 of chapter 11. He said, I'd encourage you to cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a serving to 7 and also to 8. For you do not know what evil will be on the earth. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or north in the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know what is the way of the wind, or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes everything. In the morning sow your seed, and in the evening do not withhold your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, either this or that, or whether both alike will be good. He says to you and to me, my encouragement, before it's too late, I'd cast my bread on the waters. Now, that's a phrase that we probably don't use too often. You probably haven't had too many people tell you that recently. But in that day, it would have been a familiar phrase. And although we have to reach back into history and try to figure it out, it comes down to one of two things. And really, they're not that far apart. One might be casting your bread on the waters in Solomon's mind. You remember in 1 Kings chapter 10, he had this whole fleet of ships that were floating all over the world, picking up peacocks and spices and myrrh and all those kinds of things. And he is saying to the people there, why don't you cast your bread on the water? Why don't you send out your ships? Why don't you take venture capitalism to its extent? Why don't you risk something? Why don't you send out your ships? You don't know when they're coming back. And in those days, you know how long it took for a ship to go a long distance, come back? It's incredible. They might be gone for months, might be gone for years before they ever got back. You don't know if your ship is going to make it, if it's sunk, if it's going to come back or not. And you might say, I'm going to play it safe. I'm not sending out any of my ships. But he says, no, if I were you, here's what I'd say. Risk. Step out. Do something. Send out your ships. It might be, he's talking about commerce. It might be, however, as you put it together with verse 2, give a serving to 7 and also to 8, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. He is not talking about commerce so much, risk and venture capitalism, if you would, but he's talking about charity. As you bump into people, whether it's 7 or, and that's a Hebrew way of saying 7 or even 8 or 5 or even 6 or 4 or even 5, that's to say, I think the number 7, but in case there's one more, I'm going to go with 8. You just help people, as he says in verse 2. Give a serving to 7 and also to 8. You just be a person noted for your charity. You know what happens when you hand out? You never know if you're going to get back. There is a sense in which, whether it's commerce or charity, here's what he's saying. I'd encourage you to risk something. I'd encourage you to step out in something. Something that has no guarantee to it. You don't know if the ship is coming back, if he's talking about commerce. You don't know if your charity to that individual will be appreciated, will ever be reciprocated. You have no clue what's going to happen. Whether it's seven or eight that you serve, you have no clue what's going to happen. But I'd encourage you to risk it all. I'd encourage you, before it's too late, to try to do something. You say, why would I do that? And his answer to you and me is kind of a surprise. Why would I risk? My answer would be, I'm going to risk when I know what the end result's going to be. I like to invest in things that are sure, don't you? I like to go out into some business when it's a sure thing, guaranteed thing. You would expect him to say, I want you to share because it's a guarantee that you're going to get back a little bit. I want you to send your ships because it's a guarantee that you're going to get something back. But he says, three, you do not knows. He tells us to jump out into risk. Instead of playing it safe and doing nothing, use what we have and do something because of three things we do not know. Notice in verse 2, you do not know what evil is on the earth. You do not know what's going to succeed, what will not succeed. You don't know what's good and what's bad. You don't know what's right and what's wrong. You don't know what's righteous and what's evil. And because you don't know, that's why I'd encourage you to go out there and risk. That's why I'd encourage you to try something. You see, if you knew all the answers to everything, it wouldn't be a risk and you'd only do the right things. But because you don't know, and besides you don't, not only is that you don't know, there's not a thing you can do about the evil and the calamities of life anyway. Here's what is true. Verse 3, if the clouds are full of rain, why don't you try to stop them? You're not going to stop them. If they're full of rain, they're going to empty. And there's not a thing you're going to do about it anyway. If a tree is starting to fall and it's going this direction, what are you going to do? Run over and move it? It's going to fall and it's going to lay right where it falls because you can't stop it and you can't change it. The truth is this, because you cannot control life and you can't control the outcome of things. See, we're all people who say, I'm not doing anything until I know what's going to happen. I'm not going to sing unless I know I can handle it well. I'm not going to teach Sunday school unless I know for sure it's going to work out well. I'm not going to do anything until I know for sure the end result of it all. And he says, you do not know what's going to happen in life. And you can't control what's going to happen in life. So why worry about it? Why don't you just go out and do something? Why don't you risk? Why don't you cast your bread on the waters? Why don't you serve seven or even eight? Why are you always playing it so safe? You know how many people have said, well, someday I'm going to help people. Someday I'm going to teach Sunday school. Someday I'm going to financially help people or spiritually help people. Someday when everything's in line. He says, no, do it now before it's too late. Because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if you're going to die tomorrow. And you could never do tomorrow if you're dead what you could do today. You do not know what evil is going to happen and you can't control it anyway. Because you don't know, risk. Do something. Notice as well in verse 5. Well, let's read verse 4. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. You farmers understand that. And living in Iowa, all of you understand that. If every time you went to plant, you said, I'm not going to plant until it's a sure thing. I'm not going to plant until the winds are right, the rains are right. I'm guaranteed that the crops will grow. I'm guaranteed that nothing's bad's going to happen. And when it's all guaranteed, then I'm going to plant. You wouldn't plant a thing ever. He said, you don't know what's going to happen, so why hold back? Go out and risk. Don't play it safe and do nothing. Do something for God. Notice the next, you do not know. It's found in verse 5, and he actually says it twice, but he always is leading to one thing. First of all, you do not know what evil, verse 2. Verse 5, as you do not know what is the way of the wind, or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child. You don't know that. Do you? Of course you don't. You don't really understand that. As you don't know them, you also do not know the works of God who makes everything. Do something for God. Because you really don't know what God is doing. You don't know what God would do with you. You don't know how God might use you teaching that class. You don't know that. You don't know what God might do in your witnessing or in your prayer. You don't know what God would do if you just move over and help somebody someday. You have no idea what God could do through you. I'd encourage you to cast your bread in the water and serve seven, even eight. Get out there and risk it a little bit. You don't know what evil is going to happen. You don't know what God's really doing in and through you. And besides that, verse 6 says this, in the morning sow your seed, in the evening do not withhold your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, either this or that, or whether both alike will be good. You don't know what's going to prosper. And because you don't know what's going to prosper, then get out there and do something. And don't play it safe and do nothing. What good would that do? You do not know what calamities could happen, and you can't control them anyway. So get out there and do something. You don't know what God is doing and could do through you. So do something. And you don't know what's going to prosper. In fact, if you understand life, most people who like farmers or like investors or financial people or whatever, you don't hold back and do nothing when you don't know which one's going to make it and which one's not going to make it. You plant both soybeans and corn, and you spread out your odds because maybe one of them, maybe both of them, maybe neither of them, but you do something. And before it's too late, he says to young people and to you and me, why don't you risk? Why don't you try something? Something you're not sure of. Something you have no guarantee on. Something you do not know the outcome of. You know, many times we have said, someday, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to witness. When it's a sure thing and I know all of the things and I understand everything, I'm going to go out and witness. And someday, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pray. When I feel good about it and I feel comfortable about it, and you know, that day I'm going to pray. And someday, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to teach. When I've been taught enough and I know all everything's in line, I'm going to teach someday. And someday I'm going to, he says, young people and all of us, do something. Get out there. You have no guarantee of what's going to happen. You have no sense of what God could do. And you really don't know what's going to prosper. So go out and do it. Do the work of God and get busy in that. You could go to many verses of Scripture to prove that is what he is trying to say. You remember in Matthew, for example, in chapter 18 and then verse 25, the parables. And he's talking about the one who's given 5 and 2 and 1 talent. Remember the one? He played it safe. He didn't want to risk anything. So he took his one and he hid it. And the one who had 2, he went out and he invested it. The one who had 5 went out and invested. They didn't know how it was going to return, but at least they did something. And the master said when he came back, well done, well done. You fool. Why did you hide the talent I gave you? Why did you play it safe? Why were you afraid of making a loss? I wanted you to go out there and use what I've given to you. And God wants you and me and every one of us, including the youth, to use the talents he has given to us. And that's why Romans 12 says that to everyone is given a gift. And in verse 6, he says, now go use it. Give it a try. You have no guarantees what's going to happen, but you also don't know what God could do. Risk. Notice the next thing he says in verse 7 down through verse 10. The second words of advice to young people are these. Truly the light is sweet, and it's pleasant for the eyes to behold the sun. And if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. All that is coming is vanity. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. You understand right at the center of that one is this. Not risk. That's the first section. He says, here's what I want you to do. Before it's too late, why don't you rejoice? Why don't you rejoice in the days of your youth? Say, well, wow, God wants me to have joy? God wants me to rejoice? I got to wait till I'm older to rejoice. No, he wants you right away to find the joy of the Lord. Right away, he wants you to rejoice in what God has done and is doing and wants you to do in life. Here's some statements that modify it as you look at that statement. Verse 7, truly the light is sweet. It's pleasant to your eyes to behold the sun. Rejoice in what you see. Rejoice in what's around you. Have you woke up this morning and noticed how pleasant the sun was? Did you notice that? Or did you just walk into your day with all of God's grandeur and all of his glory and all the things that give you reason to rejoice and you missed them all? The sun was up and you didn't notice it. The Lord was providing the wonder of creation all around you, and it didn't bring you any joy. You were so focused on problems or pains or whatever it might be that you missed what was right there in front of you. Rejoice. Rejoice in what God has already done. It's all around you in His grandeur and in His glory. Notice as well verse 8. But if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. All that is coming is vanity. He says, you rejoice in what you see. That's verse 7. You rejoice in spite of sorrows. You might live many years, and you might have most of them be really, really great years and pleasant years and years full of joy. But you will also know this. It is almost guaranteed in life that you will have some sorrow along the way. It is almost guaranteed in life that you have some pain in life. It is almost guaranteed in life that there will be days when things don't go correctly by your perspective. So what are you going to do? Be discouraged, mope around, hang your head down because you had pain yesterday? Said no. You rejoice in spite of the darkness, in spite of the sorrow, in spite of the pains of life, because everybody has them. That's just part of life. And if you're going to let that destroy your joy, you will always be destroyed. You will never have joy. Rejoice before it's too late. A lot of people say, you know, someday I'm going to be happy. Someday I'm going to have joy when I get the car I want, when I get the house I want, when I get this paid off, when I have the job I want. I said, no, in your youth, rejoice. Notice as well, as you read down in verse 9, rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart. Somehow that doesn't sound right, does it? You know why we say that? Because we think they're all going to make all the wrong choices. So we have to keep telling them, no, 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 no. And so it seems like he's making a wrong statement here when he says, just walk in the ways of your heart. Well, it's connected with the joy thing, and so we have to understand it correctly. And perhaps we should read it all so we get it straight. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these, God will bring you into judgment. What he is saying is, young person, walk in the impulses of your heart and what seems to be right in you or in your eyes. But always remember this, God's watching. God's watching. God's watching. And when you put those two together, you recognize what he is saying. Rejoice in what you want to do. But just don't do anything. Just don't run off and do evil things. Just don't run off and do bad things. Just don't run off and do things that would not be pleasing to God. Walk in the impulses of your heart and what seems right to your eyes. But always remember that it's modified by the reality that God is watching and he expects you to live correctly. And when you put that together, you recognize he is not saying do whatever you want to do. He is saying do whatever you want to do as long as it's in the confines of the will of God and the way of God and what's right before God. He says, young person, rejoice. Rejoice in what's obvious to you all around. Rejoice in spite of the fact that there are sorrows in life. That's just going to be a part of life. You've got to get past that someday. Rejoice in what you want to do. You know how many young people are trying to please their parents or their teachers and be somebody they're not? You don't have to be what your mom and dad want you to be. You don't have to be what your teachers want you to be. You can listen to their advice. You can take great counsel from them. But Solomon says, just be who you are. It's what you do best. Maybe you want to be a doctor, then go be a doctor. Maybe you want to be a nurse, and be a nurse. He says, you just move with the impulses of your heart and your life. Rejoice in it. If you want to be a secretary, go do it. As long as you also recognize that God's watching, there's a box, you just can't do anything. You got to do something inside the box of God. He is saying to the young people, risk. Get out there and cast your bread and serve some people. He is saying to young people, rejoice, enjoy life, keep it in the will of God, but do it and enjoy it. And then he finally says in chapter 12, verses 1 through 7, those famous words that you've all said so many times to young people, remember. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth. You understand that that means if you're remembered, that means that person is in your thoughts, right? You remember him. So you're walking through life. How many remembered God yesterday? Well, if you did, what you're saying is, as I walked through life yesterday, God was in my thoughts. I remembered him. I thought about him. He was part of my thought process. He was a part of my life. And he says, here's my advice to you. Keep God in your thoughts. As you walk through life as young people or even for us who are a little bit older, before it's too late, make sure you're a person who keeps God always in your thoughts. And as you walk through your day and as you bump into people and do all kinds of things, make sure God's somehow a part of that, part of your thought process and part of your thinking. You don't live as if God doesn't exist. You don't live in a vacuum apart from Him. You don't wake up every Sunday and say, oh, I got to remember God today. Throughout your whole life, He's a part of your thought process. He's a part of who you are. He's a part of what you do. He says there's a couple of reasons for that. And here they are. In verse 1, before the difficult days come, and the years draw nigh when you say, I have no pleasure in them. You see, a lot of times in our culture, we have this little phrase, you got to sow your wild oats. You got to kind of get it out of your system when you're young, you know, do all those evil things and bad things and crazy things because someday you got to mature and be a real adult. So just get it out of your system and sow your wild oats. He would say the exact opposite. While you're young, why don't you put God in your thinking and make Him a real part of your life? Because someday the difficult days are going to come. Someday the problems are going to come. And then you will be so restricted in what you can do for God. You will be so limited in what you can accomplish for God. If you wait till you're old to really think about God and live for God and incorporate God in your life and your thinking, if you wait till the problems all come, you will be restricted in what you can accomplish for Him. Now while you're young, now while you have youth and vigor and strength and you don't have the problems as old people have, why don't you get out there and do what you can do? Because someday you won't be able to do what you can now do. That's a hard thing for us to learn, isn't it? I remember one of my good friends is a pastor in New York. He had a real tough time growing old. Most of us do. We always played softball. His church, my church, everybody's churches. We had a team. I played left field for our team. He played whatever for his team. And then the day came when he couldn't play softball anymore. He wasn't good enough. His legs didn't move like they used to move. His arms didn't catch things like they used to catch. And I kind of laughed about that. And then my day came when I couldn't catch the ball anymore. I'll never forget that day. Man, that ball was hit. My legs were moving and my body wasn't. You know, I don't know what happened. And the ball that I was supposed to catch dropped in front of me. I just about walked off the field. I don't know what happened to me that year. You recognize before those problems come, how much couldn't you do for God? To say someday I'm really going to serve God, incorporate Him in my life, is foolishness. Do it now. Here are some problems. It says in verse 2, while the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain. You know, get it over with. Enjoy life and serve God now before all these bad things happen to you. And then he just lists them and you can read them. Some people think this is poetic. That's where Robert Frost was commenting on this. I think it was Robert Frost who said, it begins with delight and ends in wisdom. In the day when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men bow down and the grinders cease because they are few and those that look through the window grow dim. When the doors are shut in the streets and the sound of grinding is low, when one rises up at the sound of a bird and all the daughters of music are brought low, also they are afraid of height and of terrors in the way. When the almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper is a burden and desires fail. For man goes to his eternal home and the mourners go about the streets. Why don't you remember God, incorporate Him in your life and in your thinking before all the problems come? Before you're afraid of heights, before you can't hear anymore, before all those bad things happen, why don't you start when you're young? Well, you still can do so much. You can still hear. You can still run. You can still climb. You can do all those things before you die. Because the day you die, you can't do a thing for God. So you do it before all the problems come. Not only that, verse 6, remember your Creator before the silver cord is loosed, golden bowl is broken, the pitcher shattered at the fountain or the well, and the wheel broken at the well. And he pictures this golden bowl hung by a silver cord. And when that cord is broken, the golden bowl comes crashing down and is shattered and is of no value anymore. And then he talks about the pitcher that's shattered at the fountain and the wheel that's broken at the well. There's this well here, has its wheel, rope over it. You put your pitcher on it, you go down, the wheel breaks, the pitcher smashes against the side and it's so fragile it breaks. You remember God before all of your potential is gone. When you're like the golden bowl, what can you do with a broken bowl? What can you do with a shattered pitcher? There will come a day when you can't do anything for God because you're going to die. And just before that, you're going to do less and less for God as far as some of the many things that young people can do. And he says, before all that happens, before your problems come, before your potential is gone, get out there and do something for God. And he says to young people those wonderful, wonderful words. I'm a little bit older in life now, Solomon speaking. I've been through all the school of hard knocks. I searched out wisdom. I tried really hard. And now I'd just like to tell you what I'd encourage you to do. Get out there and do something for God. Even without any guarantees of how it's going to turn out. So today, worry about God letting you reap. You don't really know how He might use you. Do something for God today. Enjoy the life God has given you today. Don't say, someday I'm going to enjoy life when I have this in order and that in order and that's right and that's right. And then I'm going to really be a happy guy. Enjoy the life God has given you right now while you're young. And then he says, incorporate God in your thinking. Remember Him. Just make Him a part of your life. Right now while you're young. Before all your problems come. And I trust that it's not only for young people that these words are given. Whatever your age is here today, God still has something for you to do. And before it's too late, why don't you cast your bread in the waters? Why don't you try it? No guarantees. You don't know what evil is going to happen. You don't know what work God's going to do. And you don't know what's going to prosper. But do it anyway. Give it a shot. Go for it. Before it's too late, why don't you smile and enjoy life? And before it's too late, really make God a part of your life. It's just part of your thinking. 24/7. I don't know what age you are, but you could still do that.